Brian Dinger, on Thursdays. Stay tuned now for Brain Damage with Eric Corley, which will follow Joel Block and Stardate here on 90.1 FM, Long Island's first station of the 90s.
Stardate October 1st. On this date, 30 years ago, the space agency NASA was born. NASA sprang from an earlier organization called NACA, N-A-C-A, the National Advisory Committee on Aeronautics. NACA, in effect, became NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. NACA had been founded in 1915. According to its charter, its job was to supervise and direct the scientific study of the problems of flight. Congress approved a budget of $5,000 a year, and in its first year, NACA had $1,000 left over. NASA's first budget was roughly 100,000 times larger. But by that time, our dreams had grown larger as well. In 1915, most people had trouble believing that space travel was even possible. By the time NASA was founded, in 1958, we'd already seen the first satellites in orbit around the Earth. Two critical decisions were made in NASA's earliest weeks. The first was to organize a man-in-space program. The program became known as Project Mercury, and the first seven American astronauts were soon chosen from the military. The second decision was to request top priority for the development of a high-power rocket engine. The goal was a rocket with 1.5 million pounds of thrust, an unheard-of amount at that time. As it turns out, the Saturn rockets that launched men toward the moon required not one, but five engines of that size. This is Stardate. Our writer and our producer is Deborah Bird. Stardate and Stardate Magazine are productions of the McDonald Observatory. We're at the University of Texas at Austin, zip code 78712. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
Changed. The new number is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Brain damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Just hold on a second.
recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
Madam Chairman, delegates to this convention, and fellow citizens, America needs Barbara Bush as First Lady. It is the American people who endured the great challenge of national calamity. So, this convention brings back so many memories for a fellow like me. I have to confess, I wasn't actually there. And my fellow citizens, the road has been glorious indeed. Eight years ago, we met at a time when America was in economic promise. And today we meet in a time of economic chaos, despair, hopelessness. I wondered why on earth John Adams said, facts are stubborn things. Facts are stubborn things. Facts are stubborn things. Now I think we can be forgiven. Facts are stupid, I should say. Now we hear talk that it's time for a change. Well, ladies and gentlemen, another friendly reminder. We are the change. We challenge the failed policies of the past because we believe that a society is great because of promises made by its government, not because of progress made by its people. And that was our change. We said something shocking. We initiated reform of the unfairness in our tax system. And what do you know? The top 5% of earners have been freed from paying any income tax at all. And millions of earners at the bottom of the scale are paying a higher percentage of the total tax revenue than they ever had before. That was our change. So, together, we pulled out of a tailspin. America is working again, just... And just since our 1984 convention, we rebuilt our armed forces. We liberated Libyan terrorism. Today, we have the first treaty in world history to eliminate an entire class of U.S. and Soviet liberal elites who loudly proclaimed that it's time for a change. And the liberals have said no. Today, I'm proud to say that we have eliminated so many, and George was there.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now...
Okay. Can't bear that twice in one night. Well, thanks to the president for stepping in there while I was on my way in. And with those wonderful words of wisdom... Here on Brain Damage, can you think of a more appropriate name for something like that? 13 minutes after 10 o'clock, and we're here with you until midnight, talking about all kinds of fun things, talking about politics and maybe sex, new TV programs, international intrigue, and of course taking your phone calls at 632-6901. That's right, 632-6901, area code 516. But first things first, the news. 14 minutes after 10 o'clock, 17 degrees Celsius, and that's 63 on the Fahrenheit scale here in Stony Brook. And three Haitian soldiers have been arrested at New York City's Kennedy Airport after allegedly forcing their way aboard an American Airlines flight in Haiti. Apparently they didn't have a ticket or anything like that, or a boarding pass, or anything for that matter. Not even a passport, just they forced their way on. The airline says nobody was injured in the incident, which follows last month's military coup in Haiti, which followed the one before that, and which followed a whole series of other events, too. The State Department is welcoming what it calls steps in the right direction in Haiti. The statement comes after the ouster of a powerful Haitian colonel who faces drug charges in the United States. Wait in line, mister. A group in Lebanon is promising to release one of the three Americans and one Indian who've been held hostage since January of 1987. The group wants the U.S. to respond to the release by declaring support for the Palestinian uprising against Israel. Iran and Iraq have resumed their peace talks at the United Nations, and a source says the session seems to be going well. And Southern Californians who forgot that today is the first anniversary of the deadly Whittier quake were given a jolting reminder. A small earthquake shook parts of the San Fernando Valley today, but no damage is reported. If they had only remembered it was the anniversary, that wouldn't have happened. USB Long Island weather is all the way over there. Okay, here it is. It's 17 degrees Celsius and 63 on the Fahrenheit scale. We're expecting to be partly cloudy throughout the night, with patchy fog sort of developing as time goes by. The low will be around 60. For tomorrow, variable cloudiness, high in the mid-70s. And for tomorrow night, occasional showers, low around 60. Once again, 17 Celsius, 63 on the Fahrenheit scale. And very good evening to one and all. This is Eric Corley, and Jim Wiener is downstairs getting a bagel or something. I don't know what, but he'll be up in a couple of minutes, and we'll be talking about various things that have been happening. I'd like to know how many people saw the debates last Sunday. Was it Sunday? Yes, it was Sunday. And impressions on that. We'll be discussing that a little bit. People have taken to sending some interesting newsletters and other bits of paraphernalia over here to the station, and one of them is a newsletter entitled Bank Fraud, the Bulletin of Fraud and Risk Management. These people put out a newsletter, and all they do is talk about bank fraud. It's incredible. And this article here is entitled ATMs Are Easier to Steal From Than People. Now, it's a little story here, a little story of three perpetrators. I just love that word. And the amount of money which is involved is $40,000. Basically, three outside computer experts breached the control system of a bank's ATM network. And these perpetrators were apprehended approximately 60 days after their first ATM breach. Now, they were employees of an independent service bureau, and each of the perpetrators had 5 or more years' experience in computer systems development and operations. And this is their story. The three perpetrators worked the second shift at a computer service bureau. Although the bureau did not have any bank clients, the three perpetrators knew that most operating systems, ATMs included, would permit 2 tries at ingress before they trigger any security or alarm response. They also knew that the third try usually would trigger either some type of security or alarm system within a specific time frame, or cause an exception report to be printed to signal management that something irregular had occurred. Well, one night as a lark, the three decided to breach the ingress controls on 3 selected ATMs they passed en route to their homes. Each perpetrator selected a different machine at a separate location, and for the next several evenings, each tried 2 times to breach the ingress control system of the ATM he had selected, keeping a careful record of everything he did. Tried 2 times, because 3 times would mean some kind of alarm would go off, so they tried 2 times each. At last, one of the perpetrators succeeded in breaching the first level of ingress control. With that data, the three perpetrators worked to see if some pattern might be used on all of the ATMs for a specific bank. They devised a number of approaches and decided to achieve the same level of control bypass at all 3 ATMs before proceeding further with the one whose control had been breached. After a number of tries, they found that one of their pattern approaches worked, and they eventually were able to breach the first control level on all 3 ATMs. And by doing so, they were able to determine that only one of the 3 was online with the bank's central computer system. The other 2 were in a mechanical or standalone mode. And next, they decided to see if they could breach the online ATM system to make withdrawals that would not be recorded in the unit's normal activity records. They knew mechanical or standalone units would record all transactions in a mode that could not be manipulated to other bank account records. They eventually developed a system that would enable them to make withdrawals after they had gained entry into the online ATM. Their system would also bypass the unit's transaction controls, allowing funds to be transferred immediately to a suspense account that would be followed up for ultimate transfer to another account on the bank's chart of accounts. The perpetrators knew that if the clerk who handled the suspense account review was careless, funds from the suspense account would probably result in the funds being transferred to a miscellaneous or general account. Thus, since their transaction had bypassed the nominal records of the terminal, it was not likely to trigger a warning that the ATM control system had been breached. Well, after further study and planning, the perpetrators decided to hit all 3 ATMs on the same evening, preferably on a stormy night in the middle of the week when foot traffic was likely to be at a minimum. As part of the scheme, they developed a universe of 10 entry codes for each ATM, in order to avoid having too many transactions on a given code, which would trigger security or alarm controls. Finally, the ideal evening occurred, and the perpetrators implemented their scheme, making approximately 250 unauthorized withdrawals totaling roughly $100,000. Now, ironically, the original motivation for the scheme was simply to see if it could be done. At the time, the money was not important. It was merely the fruits of their efforts. However, once the perpetrators got their hands on the money, there was growing pressure to split the proceeds. Finally, after a fortnight of discussion, the three agreed to share the proceeds and to be careful as to how they used the funds. Once they had split the proceeds, however, it almost became a race to see who could spend the money the fastest. Since they were very open in discussing their new lifestyles with neighbors and work associates, it quickly became apparent they were living beyond their means. The police and bank security personnel who investigated the unauthorized ATM withdrawals had no valid leads until they heard about the three individuals who were living at a higher level than in the past. Follow-up disclosed their computer backgrounds and the fact that all three tended to experiment with their work computers whenever they had an opportunity. The three suspects were put under extended surveillance, and finally, about 2 months after the initial fraud, one of the three perpetrators went to one of the ATMs where the earlier fraudulent transactions had taken place and attempted to make an unauthorized withdrawal. He was unaware that the control systems on both the online and standalone ATMs had been substantially changed. One of the new controls was set to trigger an alarm system on the second unsuccessful try at unauthorized ingress. After the second attempt, the police and bank security people who had observed the event immediately closed in on the individual. While what they witnessed did not confirm that the individual had been involved in the earlier fraud, the individual grew anxious and confessed not only his own involvement, but that of his two associates as well. So this all got resolved in the following way. The senior management of the bank, with full police approval, agreed to reduce charges against the perpetrators, providing they gave full details on how they had breached the ATM ingress controls and gave recommendations to the bank's computer and security personnel for strengthening controls to avoid repetition of further unauthorized ingress. In other words, they told them the secret of how they did it and promised not to do it again. The perpetrators cooperated fully and identified several control witnesses that were promptly corrected by the weaknesses that were promptly corrected by the bank's computer and security personnel. And because of their cooperation and the fact that none of them had any prior criminal record, the perpetrators were each sentenced to 5-year probation periods. Now, what actions were taken by the bank? On the basis of what they learned from the perpetrators, the bank's management group initiated a program where selected internal computer personnel, working with the security and internal audit functions, routinely tested ATM controls to see if they could be breached. The bank also strengthened its policies and procedures for required reporting of irregular computer system conditions. Training programs were developed for both computer competent and non-computer supervisory and office personnel to make them aware of what can go wrong in computer environments. And to assure maximum participation in the control program, the bank initiated a bonus system for suggestions to improve controls or enhance the values of operating computer systems. This little newsletter here is just filled with stories like this. Another story concerns a bank that gave away money to a customer, and the title is "The Bank's Computer Made the Mistake, So Why Blame Me?" Well, they did blame him, and they made him give it all back. It's incredible, the kind of newsletters that you see popping up. This is entirely bank fraud. Most of it is ATMs. And I'd like to know, you know, if people have seen strange and crazy things going on automated teller machines. I know we've gotten so that we have to live for these things. We have to make all our deposits and withdrawals with these little machines. We never see people anymore. And there's a lot of control in those little creatures. Well, I believe Jim is back. Jim, are you back? Jim,
yes.
Ah, there you are.
Hiya.
Ah, okay. I don't know if you heard that story I read. I was talking about bank fraud here, and it's interesting what's going on out there.
It is. It has prompted me to ask, first of all, whether there's a newsletter.
You know, there is. There is a newsletter. Mm-hmm. A newsletter about newsletters.
About newsletters, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a newsletter about how to start newsletters, and a newsletter
as
to There's all kinds of newsletters out there. This one is incredibly expensive, though. It's only 8 pages long, and it costs $150 for a year. It's a monthly.
Hmm.
So that's
8 pages long. $150
actually, this
per
is
year.
From
wow.
19. This is from 1986. The listener sent this in. Apparently, has old copies of these floating around, and I assume it's still this magazine is still coming out, or newsletter, or whatever.
I would think so, because that's I'm sure a very relevant topic to banks.
Uh-huh. And just about anything you can think of, there is a newsletter attached to it.
Yeah.
So.
Do you, you made an interesting remark about having to build one's life around ATMs.
And, my life is totally built around ATMs
now,
at this stage.
I don't know what this says about me, but I've yet to get a bank card for an ATM.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, then, Jim, you are in the minority.
Yeah.
You are in the 18th century as far as
right. I mean, I'm not bragging
goes.
About it particularly. I'm just saying as a...
Well, is it something... Are you reluctant to do this, or is it something that...
You know what I think it is more than anything else? I don't think I'm really reluctant to do it. I think that I've just found that I'm not terribly inconvenienced by having to go into a bank and take care of the business inside the bank. I guess it's just one of those things of circumstance where, based on my habits or my activities... That's what I'm saying. I'm not bragging. I think that it's, I don't think it's any big accomplishment. I think it's just circumstance that I'm able to, or so far I've been able to carry on without having to use the automatic teller machines. I think they're a great convenience. I mean, it's certainly expands the ability for people to do their banking business and not have to be confined.
I've never gotten the wrong amount out
I'd
of
say
one
most,
of things.
I have heard some bad stories, but I suppose that on a percentage basis, most of the time, people don't have a problem getting cash or having deposits honored. I can see that it would be, on that basis, it would be a reliable way of conducting one's business. I'm not really skeptical about that. I think it's just that I've just never been motivated. I just never felt the necessity for it.
Yeah, it kind of grows on you, I think.
I can understand that.
Get more and more enslaved to it with every day. Well, it's good to make a banking transaction at 3 o'clock in the morning, though. You know,
you mean
that's when I usually balance my books.
Yeah, well, I was going to say it's nice because you don't have to. You can take care of other activities that are more demanding of your attention during what would normally be considered banking hours, like I guess 9 to 3 or whatever, and be able to defer the banking business till some other time when it's more convenient. But when you say that you've become enslaved to it, what is the downside of it that you find?
Well, I guess I'm prone to something happening. I mean, I could become a victim. I mean, I keep track, and I know a lot of people don't do this. A lot of people don't keep their little receipts.
Oh,
you know?
I see.
And I keep my receipts, and I tally it all up. It takes a good part of a day to figure it all out.
All right.
But you do that, you keep track of everything. I have caught mistakes, actually. I shouldn't say that there have never been mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
I've never gotten the wrong amount of cash from a machine, but I have been billed for transactions that never took place.
I see.
And, things like that do happen. And I've never found a mistake in my favor, though.
Mm.
Well, I'll be quick to point that out.
Mm. Not like on the Monopoly game where you pick up the card.
It doesn't work that way. Real life does not work that way for some reason.
No. Bank error in your favor. What a nice sound that is, isn't it?
Yeah, but, according to this bank fraud newsletter here, if you get a bank error in your favor, it's not your money. You're supposed to pay it back.
Well, I mean that...
And not even get a reward for doing that.
I see what you mean. Actually, I think what the Monopoly game meant was that the implication was that the bank had... probably initially taken more money from the person, maybe for some kind of mortgage payment than they should have, and they're returning it to them, so it's found money.
So you're also going back to where you started.
Well, that's true, but I guess maybe the presumption is that they give you interest on it or something.
I don't know.
I mean, I think I'm overanalyzing that part of it, but did you hear the case recently about, apparently, if I remember it correctly, it was a teenager, I think he was 15 years old or something like that.
Oh, that would qualify him. Yeah,
went to an automatic teller machine, and I think what he... Well, no, I should say...
What?
See, now, if I say this, if I describe what I remember him doing, am I, since this is federally licensed equipment that we're using here,
yeah.
Am I disclosing a means of performing some activity involving computers we're not supposed to do.
I believe you're reporting a factual development.
Well, you see, the thing is, I don't remember exactly. I don't have the news story in front of me. So, I mean...
Speculate.
I will say that to the best of my recollection, and I'm certainly not, and I want to make myself clear about this, I am not personally advocating, nor I'm sure does WUSB Radio or the State University of New York at Stony Brook or the State University of New York
or
main
anyone
campus,
on Long Island,
or, you know, main office
anyone,
in Albany,
anyone in New York State,
anyone in New York State,
no one with any ounce of integrity in the human race
right,
would advocate
in the Milky
doing
Way galaxy
what Jim is about to relate.
Exactly, exactly.
So let's hear it. Let's hear
right.
this horrible thing that you're about to tell us.
I think what this fellow did was to go to an automatic teller machine. And I guess he had a bank card, I guess he had his own bank card. Maybe it was somebody that was, he had a bank card, apparently, and apparently it was legitimately his own bank card. But what he did was...
That's all you need.
Not legitimate, in that he put the card in, and he then indicated that he was making a deposit of something like $100,000, but he wasn't putting in a cash or a check or any other instrument equaling $100,000. I don't know if he put anything in there, but it certainly wasn't anywhere near $100,000.
Uh-huh.
And because of that, since it was on the weekend or like on a Friday night, there was going to be a lapse of time before that deposit could be verified. So I don't know exactly how he worked it out, but what he was able to do was to, for example, go to a car dealership, and he was able to convince the dealer that he had a substantial amount of money in the bank and could easily afford a new car, which he bought.
Well, let me first of all say I have never in my entire life, and I have tried to see if this was possible. I'm not saying I tried that, but I have done little experiments to see if that kind of thing is possible. And I have never seen a bank where you can deposit something and have it available before it's verified.
That's the thing.
I've never seen that. Now, there was a case, though, I believe it was last year sometime, maybe even earlier this year, of disintegrating money. People would deposit money that would disintegrate before it could be verified, and somehow it would be credited to their account, but the money didn't exist. Now, I still don't know how that's possible, because my bank has never given me credit for money before they actually have it in their hands.
Mm.
So I don't know exactly how that works.
Yeah,
I doubt it does.
Remember. Yeah, maybe I don't have it quite right, but he was apparently able to be able to make it appear as if he had on deposit a lot more money than he actually had. And, I mean, it's not... I know that essentially it's not a funny thing, you know, criminal activity like that, but, I mean, I found it amusing, just the idea that somebody apparently can, it's almost like wishing that you had the money, and for a brief time able to benefit. What they were describing in the story was that he was able to benefit from it, even though, of course, things caught up with him.
You know, I did do something, and I was wondering how much trouble I could get into for doing this. I used to have a bank account, and then I canceled the bank account because the bank was a bunch of idiots. I just wanted to say that because they really were. I mean, I'm not going to say the name of the bank or anything, but boy, these people, I mean... They should be holding hostages somewhere. That's the kind of people these are. Awful people. I mean, they do horrible things. They make mistakes. They don't answer their phones. They don't correct them. They're just horrible people. I can't say enough about them. Where was I? Oh, yeah, but I canceled my account with that bank. And I went out and got another bank. But I still had my checks from this bank. And they didn't ask for them back. So I had all these checks, brand new spanking checks. And I wrote a friend of mine a check for $1 million, and I gave it to him, and I don't know, you know, if he deposited it or something, I could get in a lot of trouble. Of course, that account doesn't exist anymore, but I don't know, you know, I mean, I just did it as a joke. I assume my friend knew it was a joke, too. I sure hope so.
Well, I would think so. You know.
$1 million, Jim. I mean, that's...
It's very funny, actually.
That's something, yeah.
You know,
it felt good writing it, too.
I can imagine. You know,
$1 million and zero, zero, and no more.
XX, right? Over 100 cents.
I don't advocate anybody try that, either.
Oh, no. Well, when I was a very young child, I guess about, I think I was about 9 or so, somebody gave me some checks to play with. I guess similar to what you're describing. I guess it was checks from an account that no longer existed. And I was writing $1 million on them. You know, I mean, the check wasn't leaving anywhere. You know, it was we ripped them up afterwards. But, I mean, it was a similar kind of thing. You know, what a kick it was to have a check and just write $1 million on it.
Right? Yeah. I can imagine that would be a good plot for a situation comedy.
Yes.
You know, they sit around doing that, and of course, like, you know, Lucille Ball comes in or something and accidentally takes it and deposits it in the ATM, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're being shot at by police and everything.
Right.
Who knows? It could be a great script there. But one thing I did do once, though, to sort of illustrate the point that it's impossible to deposit money and that's not there. Once somebody owed me a tremendous amount of money, like $300 or something, and they decided to be a wise guy and pay it to me all in singles. So I went up to the ATM machine, and I decided to deposit it all. And guess what? You can't fit 300 single dollar bills into an envelope to put it in the ATM. But I'd already written out the deposit slip for 300. So what I did was I only deposited 100 in that envelope, and then I worked it out arithmetically, and I like wrote 1 cent or something on the other one, so that the deposit slips added up to the right amount, but they weren't correct for each envelope. But if you added them all together, and if you added the money, it all added up. Well, that wasn't good enough for the bank. They sent me this these three little slips saying, you made a mistake. You deposited the wrong amount of money. And, you know, if you added up the mistakes, you could see that it wound up being the right amount of money. But they
didn't want to go that far with it. Yeah,
yeah, they caught it. And, you know, nothing happened because, you know,
well, you weren't doing
the right amount anyway.
Yeah, you weren't doing anything really, you know, dishonest. You weren't taking anything that didn't belong to you. And I bet that they didn't take the little extra initiative of just looking at the total package and said, wait a minute, something is...
I've never had a case where the bank says I didn't deposit something that I did. I'm sure I'm going to next week now, but there really isn't much of a way of verifying it. I mean,
no,
you deposit
it's true.
Cash, that little receipt you get isn't your receipt.
It's true. It's just that you put something in there, but not really what it... Verifying exactly what
supposedly
it is.
they have two witnesses that open up the envelope and tell you.
But you know, they could you don't know that. You still can't be that 100% sure that it's going to be properly taken care of. You could have two witnesses who were both under the same like a folie à deux, you know, like they're both delusional in the same way, and they both make a mistake and decide that you're not depositing what you say you're depositing. I mean, it's very, very unlikely, but it could happen. And I suppose that's one reason why I don't go to ATMs, why I like to go up to a
teller. But, you know, it's so amazing. I went across country about a month or so ago, and all of a sudden my bank card seems to work everywhere, even in Canada. Well, I don't know if it worked in Canada, but it did work all across the country. And just to be able
nice
to go out to a
feeling.
Bank, put your card in, and get money out, assuming it's there, you know, it's nice.
It is a very nice feeling, but, you know,
of course, you spend money a lot more, which I guess is the point.
Well, yes, but you know something? In a way, it doesn't always have to work that way. It doesn't have to be negative in that way, because since there's a certain limit each time you go to take out cash, it might actually help people limit the amount of money they take at any one time.
Uh-huh.
So I can see that there's a plus side to it also. Yeah. I was just saying that maybe one reason why I've never been motivated to go to an ATM is I like the idea of going up to a live teller, handing the money and getting the receipt, and then that receipt you can, you know, if there's ever any problem, you can say, no, wait a minute, here's the receipt, and, you know, this is a real receipt. But, again, as you said, it's very, you've had no experience where anyone has ever said that you didn't deposit what you didn't.
I'm sure there have been many such experiences, though.
But I guess on a percentage basis, it's not that bad. Otherwise, I suppose that there'd be more publicity about it. But you know, you mentioned something about going anywhere in the country and being able to withdraw cash, which I can see is a very secure feeling. But it leads me to speculate what it would be like if, let's say, of course, this is an absurdist notion, but it just seems funny to me. Let's assume that every time somebody from, whether they were going around the country or just around the metropolitan area, went to a bank, you know, one of these cash exchange bases where it's not, you know, the so-called nice system, where a number of banks participate in
right.
the pool,
right.
and if when you put your card in to a machine that was to a nice machine. We're not giving a plug here, but just mentioning it by way of example. And the nice machine was at a bank from which your card was not. In other words, your card was from another bank. If every time you took the money out, that immediately, let's say you take a $25 withdrawal out,
uh-huh.
that immediately somebody in the bank at any hour of the day or night at that bank notes the fact that it's money that they're giving to you from their bank, but you have a card from a different bank, and they go running down to the nearest branch of your bank and they knock on a back door,
uh-huh.
and some other person who's also waiting there greets them and has to count out $25 to them so they can run back and replenish it in their bank.
Mm.
And you'd have these people running all over the city doing this all night, let's say, you know.
I've seen that happen, though.
Have you?
Well, I've seen people running around.
Oh.
I can't imagine what it's for.
Oh, well,
be something like that, anyway.
Well, I don't know. I've seen them running around in the bank or just in general?
All over the street, all over
just
the city.
Just running around over the city?
Yeah, it's incredible. Well, should we open up the phones?
Sure, but how about answering them instead? Then if it doesn't work, we can open them up and see what's wrong.
There's a screwdriver right here. We can.
Good
open
idea.
Them. I noticed there was a call on hold for a long time.
Yes, we accidentally answered the phone before and then realized it was for your show, so we put them on hold, so they are waiting to speak.
Okay, because after 10 minutes, and they have been on hold for 10 minutes, the phone starts ringing again.
Uh-huh.
That's in case you forget about the person on hold. It's an automatic system. So
I see.
They've been on hold for a long time, and now the phone is ringing, so we'll pick that up. Our number is 632-6901. You know, if anyone has a bank story, I guess that's something we could start off with.
Yeah.
But I really like to talk about the debates, too, because that was a lot of fun. That's even more fun than bank fraud.
Yeah.
And all kinds of... We're going to make some phone calls, too, and talk about the new TV season, I hope. There's not much you can do in 2 hours. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It takes about 2 hours just to get started.
It's
and,
true.
And we're always at our peak at midnight. And,
it's true.
And we just sort of peter off at that point. Oh, well, 632-6901, area code 516.
It's almost Sisyphean, isn't it?
Yeah. 1042, brain damage, good evening, you are on the air. Wait a minute, hold on. Sorry, I had the wrong switch down, you're on the air now.
Hello, it's Andrew Goldberger.
Hello, how are you?
Pretty good.
You're the person on hold all that time?
Yep.
Well, was it fun being on hold?
But not really.
It's not musical hold. We apologize for that.
It's okay.
Those things happen, you know.
Yeah, well, the thing that I want to talk about, bank machines.
Yeah. Do you use a bank machine? How old are you?
No, I'm 12.
You're 12 and you don't use a bank machine?
No, I don't.
Incredible.
The thing is that, you know, Americans are the laziest people in the universe.
Now, Andrew, I'm an American, and Jim here is an American. And, I don't know if this phone is American, but almost everything in the studio is American. And I'd like to say I agree with that, but I don't know. You know, I know a lot of Americans. I come in contact with them, and they're not the laziest people in the world. Some of them are. But I think there's another nationality you owe that to, and I think we all know who we're talking about.
Oh, yes, but listen to this.
I really don't know who I'm talking about, but go ahead.
We have machines.
If anyone complains, that means they're admitting that their nationality is the laziest in the world. Let's keep that in mind. Go ahead.
Interesting point.
We're saying that we have machines that collect money because people are too lazy to take money. I mean, it's not that hard.
What do you mean people are too lazy to collect money?
I mean, bank tellers, now they have machines for it.
Well, I don't think the bank tellers asked for the bank machines. I think that was put in simply to make things a little bit... I mean, I can never get to a bank by 3 o'clock. I don't know about you, but I can never do that.
You were going to say simpler. And what can be simpler than collecting money, counting it, or giving money? It's not that hard. Everybody does it.
Yeah, but don't you think it's faster to just put your money into a machine and have it be done?
Right, but it's...
Machines don't go on strike. They don't ask for higher wages. They don't get sick.
Yeah, but the thing is, next we're going to have machines doing exercise for us. You know, we just lay in bed and we see the machines do exercise. I mean, it's not... It also cuts down the work rate.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, we're losing the human factor. There's no question about that. But what do we do? Do you have a solution?
Well, it's not... We can't do diddly squat about it. It's the leaders of the world. Ronald Reagan. Why doesn't Michael Dukakis or George Bush say something about this?
About bank machines. Well, they've been remarkably silent about this issue. I'll have to say that.
Well, okay, another...
By the way, speaking of the two... well, I don't know what to call them, but the two candidates, I guess, is the kindest way to say it. Did you watch the debate last week?
No, I couldn't catch it, but I heard a lot.
I'm surprised.
It.
I thought you would watch them. Of all people, you seem to be so aware of what's going on.
No, I read about it in Newsday, though.
Ah, well, what are your impressions of what you read through a newspaper?
Well, it says that no one won, and...
Interesting how they decide that. I watch the debates And I was looking at this whole thing, you know, all 2 hours of it, and I said, wow, Dukakis really, you know, kicked Bush's butt. And here the newspapers come out and say, well, nobody won, and that's the way it stands, you know?
I think the Duke is the greatest thing. But what really changed my mind is, have you ever seen that commercial about Boston Harbor?
I never saw the commercial. I've heard about it.
Yeah, it goes, Boston Harbor, the dirtiest harbor in the United States. It will cost, what's it called, the public, $6 million to, what he has done for Massachusetts. So, I was like, oh my God, how could they just say that?
That's a pretty low blow, I have to admit.
It was, but I feel strongly about it because,
if you point to Iran-Contra, and, you know, you say George Bush was there, he was at the meeting, he didn't say anything, or he didn't vote against it, or he voted for it. That's a fact, a direct result. He did this, it meant that. Now, Michael Dukakis, true, is the governor of Massachusetts. But that doesn't mean that you can point to every street sign, every pothole, and every little thing and blame it on him. I mean, I'm sure he takes a share of the responsibility, but it just seems like they're grabbing at straws.
Yeah, George Bush has some low blows we can hit at him, too.
Uh-huh. Well, I think he's doing a fair job of that himself.
I know, especially Dan Quayle.
Uh-huh. Well, now, you know, I think the vice presidential debate is going to be interesting, because I have a feeling they're going to be more vicious, you know? We don't really know who these people are. We haven't really seen them talk in public, and certainly not with the other one in the room. And I think that's coming up, what, this week?
On Wednesday.
I have a TV guy right in front of me. This is Wednesday?
Yes, on Wednesday.
Okay, thank you, Jim.
Sure.
It's, yeah, Wednesday, 9 p.m.
What else are you talking about?
We're talking about bank fraud, vice presidential candidates, what else? The new TV season?
Oh, yeah, I heard it's going to be great.
Oh, yes, I have a fall preview issue of TV Guide here, and I'm going to stop periodically and read something about a new TV show, and we'll see just how promising these shows are. What have you heard about it, though?
I heard Family Ties is going to be on for the last season.
Uh-huh. I hear Cosby Show might be on for the last season.
Yeah, well, that would be a bummer because I really like it.
Uh-huh.
I like Bill Cosby. The other characters. And maybe Theo.
Yeah, Theo's cool.
But,
you know, if this show ends, he'll do something else. And it'll end because he wants it to end, not because it got canceled. And that's probably the best way for a show to go out.
But the thing that I was disappointed because a lot of kids are voting now. You know, they have these kids' votes all across the country. They're voting, even like kindergarten kids. There's a vote tally all over the country where all these kindergarten kids are voting for their favorite candidate.
Uh-huh.
And they hear the opposing sides and then they cast their ballot. And so far, Dukakis got 56% of that vote. So even the kids like him.
Well, I mean, if the kindergarten kids, I don't know if that's, if they have a parallel there, if they've said, you know, what the kindergarten kids say this year.
It's not only kindergarten kids. It's kids like me and other junior high school and even high school kids.
Uh-huh.
Well,
unfortunately, you kids have no power whatsoever, but you can always talk to people and get them to vote.
Yeah, it's, well,
do you think your parents share your view?
Well, my mother and father want to vote Mike Dukakis.
Uh-huh.
But in all the years my mother has voted, never once come out with a winner, so I think she's going to win.
She could be the problem then, because I know there has been something like that has been affecting the outcome. So maybe if she stayed home, the Dukakis people would have a better chance.
You're going to vote for Dukakis?
Not that I'm not endorsing anybody, but I'm just sort of saying that.
Okay.
I got to be careful what I say here.
Yeah.
One thing I do take pride in, and that's being independent. That's being able to vote Republican and Democrat. You know, I don't have to vote a party platform, because what's the point? You know, I mean, if a Republican candidate makes more sense than a Democratic candidate, and you are a liberal, you should be able to vote Republican, you know, if it's something you believe in.
I agree. Oh, yes.
Well, I came up with a great political team. This is, like, the greatest in the whole entire country, and I know you're going to laugh at me, but I'm sure these two would do very good.
We always laugh at you. Go ahead.
Mario Cuomo as president, and Morton Downey Jr. as vice president.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I'm not laughing. I am not laughing.
I was crying.
Oh, that's something to think about.
No, but wouldn't that be great?
That would be, I don't know if great is the word, but it would certainly be something.
Well, Morton Downey Jr. would take action.
He certainly would.
No. Because he does stuff for the MIA, he does POW stuff. He does a lot of cool things, and he's not for abortion, which I think is good, because abortion is just killing a baby, and I don't really think
I saw a bunch of people this morning picketing against abortion outside a hospital. What hospital is that right on Route 347 and 111? I'm not sure what it's called.
Well, it's Smithtown. I think it was called Smithtown General at
Smithtown
one point.
General, and I think it's called something else now.
Mather?
No. That's
I think it's a community. It used to be either called something about it, something like a community hospital, and then they changed it.
Okay,
I forgot.
Something like that. I saw about maybe 50 people with signs, abortion, anti-abortion signs.
But,
so that was interesting.
But they can't say abortion is right because...
Oh, my goodness. I'd say the word abortion. Look what happens to the phone. Bam, all the way up on the top. Wow. Well, Andrew, we're going to let you go because we got to get to some other calls.
Okay.
All right, but thanks very much for calling.
Okay.
Good to have somebody who's aware of what's going on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Even if he is 12 years old. I wish other people were aware, you know?
That's right.
I don't know if you've been hearing the surveys that they take. I don't know who takes these surveys. And I don't actually know anybody who's like this, but they can't find the Pacific Ocean on a map, you know? Like, oh, it makes me sick.
I know some people can't even find maps.
I can't find maps. I look for them all the time.
Maybe they're in
the
Pacific
Ocean. Try
finding
a good map. Yeah, I hate maps that have the United States in the middle. I mean, it's nice to be the center of attention, but that means you got two Indias. You know, you got India on the left India on the right, and you got two Chinas, too, sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't you just have the ocean be the dividing line and put the United States on the left and the Soviet Union on the right and, you know, all that kind of jazz? Well, anyway, here's a show. We're going to go back to the phone in a second. A show called Midnight Caller. Jack Killian, played by Gary Cole, is all talk, but you can't say he's no action. Killian is a former cop who accidentally killed his own partner while they were chasing a felon. He was exonerated, but he's had enough of police work. Now, as the Nighthawk, he's the host of a late-night radio call-in talk show called Midnight Caller, also the name of the TV show. Did you notice that?
Wow.
Devon King, played by Wendy Kilbourne, who is the lovely owner of KJCM Radio in San Francisco, hired Killian because he's outspoken and knows police work. Just the right guy to be talking to listeners who are worried about street crime. Killian's engineer is Billy Poe, Dennis Dunn, who teaches him how to work the buttons. We're on a 7-second time delay, says Billy. If the caller becomes abusive or obscene, you have enough time to cue him off before the calls get on the air.
Cue him off?
I thought that phrase didn't make any sense. I've worked in radio a few years, and so have you. You've never heard that, have you?
To cue... Well, no, not in...
You cue up a record. You cue up a record, you cut somebody off. Cue him off.
I've heard cueing off if you're a director, maybe at a live performance. Well, maybe... before television, in radio, maybe the director would signal to somebody, but not even then. Because I'd say it's more of a visual medium term. If let's say a floor manager, I'm not even sure of this, but a floor manager during a television production is cueing people to do certain things in the studio, and maybe he cues somebody off to go off the set, but even there, I don't quite see that because if someone knows, if a performer knows that it's time for them to get off, they're going to get off the stage, get off the mic, whatever.
Right. I mean, it's
get off screen. You don't need So cueing somebody...
it just doesn't work.
I've heard of... well, a lot of things don't...
It doesn't work on radio. It's not a radio...
Cueing somebody... This is their attention. See, this
All right.
is...
Let's let it go. Let's
yeah,
let it
yeah
go.
You're right.
It's their
right,
TV
right.
show. They don't know what they're talking about. Okay, who cares? The caller becomes abusive or obscene. You have enough time to cue him off. Little SIC in brackets there. Once, you know, I saw SICK in brackets, which meant that they got that wrong.
So you'd have to write SICK and then in parentheses SIC.
Right,
that.
Something like that. Anyway, if the caller becomes abusive or obscene, you have enough time to cue him off before the calls get on the air. And Killian says, what if I become abusive or obscene? And Billy says, then I censor you. But Killian will have more... Killian will have more to worry about than that. In the pilot episode, a beautiful but psychotic young hooker, played by Jenny Wright, is responsible for 6 serial murders, and now she's got her eyes on Killian.
That's oh, my.
An NBC my. Program.
Stabbed some boxes of shredded wheat, and now she's going after the talk show host.
The program is called Midnight Caller. It's on NBC, and let me check the little handy-dandy schedule thing they have here to see exactly what time they schedule it. What did I say, Tuesday?
I think so.
Tuesday night, NBC, 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock, so that program can be indecent if it wants to be.
That's right. But, you know, before I forget, I just wanted to ask you, Eric, is Brain Damage going to move to television with a TV version of the show?
You know, those rumors have been floating around for the last couple of days, and I don't know who's responsible for them.
Oh,
I don't know, and I'm certainly, you know...
But is it a true
disavowing
rumor?
All knowledge
oh, okay.
of that kind
oh,
of
okay.
thing.
Okay. Well,
we have no plans at this time to move to television.
But is there a home version?
If such a thing were to happen in the future, I would address it then.
I understand, but
at this point in time, I have no plans.
But is there a home version of Brain Damage? You know, like they have a home version of Jeopardy and stuff like
that? I'm not sure about that. You know, they don't tell me those things.
Oh.
You know, the checks just go to the management, and oh. I don't see
oh,
a penny of it.
Oh, you get checks from this program generates
oh, yeah.
revenue?
Huh.
I didn't know that. How does it generate revenue?
Oh,
we were in
the kickback. Oh no.
Oh, no.
No. We don't.
Oh,
no
dear.
I thought this mic was off.
Oh my goodness.
No. We don't do any of that kind of stuff here. We're good, honest people.
Eric, I am.
We just talk about bank fraud.
Eric,
and TV
I
programs
am,
and politics.
I'm appalled. I'm so disappointed.
You look like a gym to me.
That you've been getting kickbacks here, and you don't give me...
No, that's what I've been complaining about.
Some?
I'm not getting any kickbacks.
Oh,
kickbacks are going right over my head into the making field goals or whatever they do.
I see.
No.
Well, I think that Patriots football is on was on earlier today.
Stony Brook Patriots, not New England Patriots.
Yes,
people are always mixing the Stony Brook Patriots up with the New England Patriots.
Oh.
The New England Patriots are good.
Oh,
occasionally. They have good seasons now and then, but the Stony Brook Patriots... They're our team here.
Yeah, they're terrific. They're fantastic.
Yeah, we had a game on this afternoon.
Yeah, we have a very good... I just want to do a little back patting. I think they have a great sports department here. I think they really put
oh,
a lot
yeah.
of effort
they,
into the
they get into
coverage, football
you
and
know,
basketball.
I'd like to see the sports department and the science fiction department sort of meet and do something together, because those are probably the two most enthusiastic groups.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, they could cover a football game that had not only, let's say, an end zone, but a twilight zone also.
Right. It's 10:58. This is WUSB in Stony Brook.
Do you think I could write for television?
Oh, certainly.
Probably with lines like that, I'm eminently qualified.
I think many people
but
can write for television.
Right away. Yeah.
Well, okay, our phone number is 632-6901. And,
of course, I don't mean to put down people who write for television. Some people are very talented, but they don't always get their work to where
no, they certainly do not. Should we make an outgoing call?
If you were lucky enough. Yeah, why not?
Make an outgoing call. Well, let's see who's on here. You're on Brain Damage. Hello? There's no one there.
It sounded like he was talking backwards.
It did sound like he was talking backwards. Do we have a tape of that? We can play it backwards and see what he said.
Let's see.
Someone want me here?
Oh, it's the rather interesting person from Connecticut, right? Are you from Connecticut? Sir?
Fuck is this?
Well, yes. I don't know if they're from Connecticut, but they're from someplace. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
From hunger, I think.
Yeah, I want to talk about, right now, I'm sitting atop the world's biggest hot dog right now. And I'm pretty excited about it, and I thought I'd chat with you guys.
Well, I certainly appreciate this. Where is the world's biggest hot dog?
It's located in Plainview, New York. Right now, we're sitting, my friend Joe here is sitting right on the sauerkraut. And we're having a tough time. Some guy named Nick Capozzi keeps calling. I don't understand about this hot dog.
Nick Capozzi?
Yeah. Does he have anything to do with hot dogs?
Well, he's a big, you know, person here at the radio station.
Well,
I guess you would consider him a big hot dog at the radio. I don't know if that's a phrase you'd use for a bigwig.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, he's pretty big. Well, I thought I'd just share that with you. And hey, you got a great show. I love it. I listen to it every day.
Can I ask a question, sir?
My question is,
no,
is
I want to ask a question.
My question is, this is my question. You know what Todd Bridges from Different Strokes?
Who's from Different Strokes?
That guy, Todd Bridges, Gary Coleman's brother.
Oh, okay.
Right, Willis?
Yeah.
He's got some kind of hormone problem, because, like, you watch one episode, and he's, like, 5'2", and then you watch the next day, and he's, like, 7'8".
Uh-huh.
Now, either the guy's got some kind of hormonal, I can't even say the word, you know, it's just...
Well, maybe there's a problem with the way the program is filmed.
You think so?
Maybe they're using a distorted lens or something.
Just because it's in syndication, they don't show, clip the shows in order.
Anything's possible.
He must have been a fool, because I don't buy it.
Can I ask you a question, sir?
Yeah.
I hear little beeps every now and then when you talk. What are those little beeps?
I told you, we're now monitoring the world's biggest hot dog right now. Watch, listen. Say look. Wait, say right. Fat content, 95%.
I see.
She's going to blow.
I see.
I'm going to have to go now.
Okay.
My boss is coming.
Okay.
I'm sitting at the Lincoln Tunnel. That'll be $2.50, sir. Okay.
Thanks for calling. I wonder if that was a PC or a Macintosh he was tapping there. Oh, boy. Well, that's good that we get updates like that. 632-6901, that is our telephone number. Let's go off campus a little bit. Jim, are you there? Jim has disappeared again. That happens every now and then. He gets beamed up by something. Let's make an off-campus call. There's our dial tone. And, oops, I can't do that, can I? There's all these rules and regulations with this new phone system here. So I can do that, but I can't do this, can I? Maybe I can do that. Does that work? Uh-oh. I think I broke it. Hold on a second. Let's try that one more time. Just trying to get an operator. That's all we're trying to do. Honest. Oh, dear. That's a sound you hear all the time here. I mean, you used to just pick up the phone and dial. Boy, Jim, are you back yet? I wish Jim was here, because he could say something clever while I was trying to dial the thing. All right.
I'm sorry.
Oh, there you are.
Here I am.
You disappeared.
Yeah, I went to check on something, and I went to throw something out before it.
All right, I'm trying to get...
Became unruly.
Get to an operator so we can make our special call.
Right.
Let me try this off mic so that the people don't have to endure that horrible sound.
Okay,
and,
so that I'll...
I'll just banter on for a second.
Sure, sure. Speaking about television, this is one of my pet topics. One of my favorite shows of all time, and this was a show that first came on when I was really... I guess too young to stay up to watch it, and I guess maybe too young to fully appreciate it, is Naked City. Again, I'm not being paid by the station that runs the show and reruns to say this, to plug it. I'm just off the top of my head saying it's one of my favorite shows. Just I think a brilliant piece of work. Really, really well written, well acted, well directed dramas, and some of them were comedic.
Jim, I hate to interrupt you, but
not at all.
We're getting through.
Quite all right.
Agency Kim, may I help you?
Yes. Hi, operator. We are trying to reach information in Seoul, South Korea. Can you help us there?
Sure. One moment.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Oh, I just love operators.
Yeah, I think on the whole, they're rather courteous, wouldn't you?
Yes. Okay. Yes, they are. And they don't have to be.
No, but just
there's
about
nothing
all
in the rules that they have to be courteous.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if people realize... The phone's ringing in Korea. Ha ha.
Hi, may I help you?
Oh, boy. Yes, is this Seoul, South Korea?
Yes.
We are trying to find the phone number for the Olympic Village, the American American team in the Olympic Village. They have a phone there?
Okay. Wait, one moment, please.
Thank you. I love trans-Pacific connections.
Yeah. I'm glad we know what the Pacific Ocean is.
I'm glad the people put the cable down, though.
Although this so could be much going, more to the point.
This could be going by satellite. This could be going through microwaves, or it could be going through the core of the Earth. Who knows how it's going?
Yeah.
It's just getting there.
Might
that is somebody in Korea.
Might have even taken an Airbus to
get there. 201.
I'm sorry, 201?
No. 1234.
Wait, could you throw that by one more time?
201.
Okay? Okay, slowly. Go ahead.
201.
Okay.
1988.
Alternating. Okay.
Hello. Can you speak French?
Yes. 201.
No, Jacka.
I'm sorry.
401. 401. Four. Not two.
Okay. Four.
Okay. 401.
Yes. Right. 1988.
401-1988. You see, when you said 1234, I thought that was part of the number.
Yes. 401-1988.
Okay. Right. Is the city code for Seoul in there?
Two.
Okay. The city code for Seoul is two.
Country code 82.
82.
And the city code two.
Yes. Country code 82.
82.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye bye.
Very nice.
Now, let's see if we can place this call. That went away. Okay, I think we can try to place this call. Now, let me just point out at this point. Now, of course, calling information is free if you call it overseas, but placing this call will cost money.
Hmm.
So,
do you need something now?
No, you can put your wallet away. Put your wallet away, Jim.
I don't know if I can handle it.
No. Don't want your money. I'm going to use my special phone card here that I've never used before.
Ah.
I'm going to try to make an international call directly using that special code.
Mm.
And let's see if it works. This will be an adventure for me as well as for other people, too.
Yeah.
First, I dial the access number and I get a special dial tone. After it connects, it is. Okay, then I enter my special code. Then I signal that I want to go overseas. And voila! Before you know it, a phone in Korea will be ringing.
How does your voice make all those tone-like noises, by the way?
Well, it takes practice. Mm. It takes lots of practice.
Clear
connection. Wow. Can you? I can't believe we're in Korea.
That's great.
But hey, we're in your summer. Call cannot be completed at
that. I wonder.
Please check the number and dial again, or call your customer service representative at 1-800.
We're not giving out your number. We're not advertising your company.
Oh dear.
I dialed that number correctly, but I'll try it one more time. I'm a patient person, and I'm willing to dial this.
Is there going to be any TV show called International Overseas Access or anything like that?
There should be, you know. Let's see, you'll dial that, and then this, and then that, and then that. And let's see what happens. I think this one's going to work.
It has that overseas sound to it.
Not yet.
Well...
Oh, for God's sake. I know what that's going to say.
Yeah? You think so?
Yeah.
Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Okay. I'm not picking that as my long-distance company. I can tell you that.
But are you sure that maybe what it is that we are actually reaching Seoul, but there's a practical joker at the Olympic Village who's doing imitations of telephone company recordings?
Well, she sounds remarkably like the lady I get when I can't complete my call as dialed.
Maybe she's in the Olympics.
What I'm going to do is go back to my bag over here and look for my other phone company card and place it using that card. So, Jim, why don't you banter away about something? Actually, it would be good if you had a copy of this TV guide, too. Do you want to saunter in here and get a copy, and you can go back in there and read it? And,
very good.
I can get the phone call started. Now, we will get through. I don't know what we're going to say. What should we say to the Olympic Village people? Olympic Village people, that's a good one. We do have their phone number. We are going to call them, and we are going to say something to them. I don't know what time it is over there. Couldn't be. It's tomorrow. That much I know. It's Sunday, and I guess they're getting ready to finish up. Well, Jim, you go ahead and read about a new TV show, and I'll find my special card.
Well, let's see. Actually, I was going to, for a little change here, I was going to see what episode of Naked City is going to be on tonight. Let me see. Let's see here. Saturday. Oh, they don't list any specifics, but it is on tonight. No, that's good. Now, as to the new shows, let's pick a new show here. Unless, of course, Eric is able to get through, in which case we'll go right to that. Let's see. Saturday's news series, page 23. Okay. Murphy's Law. Daedalus Murphy, played by George Segal. Actually, he's an actor I have a lot of admiration for. Is a big city insurance investigator with a history of alcoholism, bankruptcy, and unstable relationships. And he's the good guy in this series, they say. His roommate is Kimiko Fanucci, played by Maggie Han, a gorgeous Eurasian model or pinup girl, depending on who's talking. Kimmy would like to be a top model, but her biggest claim to fame is being the scantily clad calendar girl for Morgan's Power Tools.
What's a top model one that just shows you the top?
No, I think it's somebody that actually handles spinning toys. you know, in other words, holds them up to the camera, you know.
Now, what's the name of this show?
This is Murphy's Law.
Murphy's Law. I love these imaginative titles.
Very much so.
Midnight Caller, so. Murphy's Law.
Yeah, Midnight Caller. Let's see some other...
the name of television show number 36.
Oh.
That's what they should do.
they made a series out of the movie Dirty Dancing. Johnny Castle, Patrick Cassidy, and Frances Baby Kellerman, Melora Hardin, are the central characters in this series, which is based very loosely, I would think so, on the 1987 film, because, I mean, how much can you stretch out on that? But as the story opens, Johnny is less than enchanted with Baby. Here's the premise.
Baby is her name?
That's her nickname. That was her nickname in the movie.
Yeah, named Baby. I can tell you that right here.
Well, I don't even know if she liked the name. Let's see. Baby is the sheltered 17-year-old... No, I'm sorry. Johnny is the streetwise, uninhibited dance instructor at Kellerman's Mountain Resort. I wonder if there's a if there are naive, inhibited dance instructors at Kellerman's Mountain Resort.
Oh, I'm certain there are.
Yeah, very likely. Baby is the sheltered 17-year-old daughter of the resort's owner, Max Kellerman, played by McLean Stevenson. Gee, I hope this series works for him. When Baby shows up for the summer to take over the job of talent coordinator, a job Johnny's also been doing, he's more than a little miffed. His beautiful dance partner, Penny, played by Constance Marie, resents Baby, too. The story begins...
What, Baby 2? Is that a sequel?
Baby Also.
Okay.
The story begins in 1963 when rock and roll...
Oh, one of these nostalgia shows.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
and pulsating Latin tempos combined to trigger the bold, openly sensuous routines called Dirty Dancing by scandalized older folks. We'll see plenty of those routines, and you can be sure, according to the TV Guide here, folks,
December.
You can be sure that Johnny will be stepping out with his baby. The question is...
There it goes now.
Which one? It's going to be on...
Baby 2.
Should I give the network, or we don't do
yeah,
that?
Yeah, go ahead.
It'll be on CBS.
On what days?
It'll be on Saturdays.
Oh, well, it'll be competing with us then, probably. That's one show our listeners will never see, I
hope.
Well, I have my new card
yes.
here, and I'm going to give it a try. And this is another phone company, and the instructions are completely different. So I will follow them. I'm looking at the back of the card now, and I think this will work fine. Okay, now, international calls. Dial 01, plus the country code, which is 82, and then the city code, and then the number... And something should happen. Listen for a recording.
Maybe we'll reach McLean Stevenson.
I guess that's a recording of a dial tone. Now I dial my 14-digit code. 14-digit code. Can you believe this? And voila!
41.
Oh, no.
704. You have entered an invalid authorization or phone card number.
This is my number.
And try again.
Gee.
Or call customer service.
I don't want to talk about it.
This is mystifying.
They messed up my call.
It's customer disservice.
They're saying my authorization code's no good. They probably heard this radio show and turned it off, so I couldn't
probably.
Do this.
You know, they're not going to get you on the ATMs and getting you on this instead. That's what it is.
Oh, boy. What can I do? Okay, let's do this, then. Let's do this. Let's try it direct and see what happens.
Okay.
Now, let me just say, Phil Fox is out there listening, our business manager. Just when this phone bill comes in, take that little yellow outline pencil and just give me the bill and take care of it from there. This seems to be working, by the way. I won't say what company we're using, but it does seem to be working.
Yeah, I think I know what company. I can guess. They can be aggravating,
we're
but
just
I got hand
silence.
They do.
There we go.
Oh,
there we go.
Okay.
Oh, it's repulsing. Listen to that.
Take, take.
That sounds like an American ring, but it's in Korea.
Hello, is this?
Hello, is this Seoul, South Korea?
Information center.
Oh, dear. Parlez-vous anglais?
Just a moment, please.
Thank you. That seems to have worked.
Hello. Hello. 영어 좀 들어봐도. 영어.
Oh, I know what that means.
Hello?
Hello, do you speak English?
I can't speak English.
Okay. Yes, do you speak English?
Hello, may I help you?
Yes, you speak English. I'm calling...
Please speak more slowly.
Okay, I am calling from the United States, and we're trying to reach the headquarters of the American Olympic team.
There is an office number, telephone number.
Okay.
Do you want to... Wait a moment, please. The number is... are you in the village? Athlete village?
I'm in the United States.
Yes, the number is 401-2055.
Okay, and if I was in the village, how would I dial that?
Pardon?
If I was in the village, how would I dial that?
If you are in the village.
Yes.
You don't have to call 401. Only 2055.
I see. Sorry, just pick up the phone and dial 2055.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye
bye. Bye. Yeah.
Isn't this great?
Gee, yeah.
Wow. So they have a very simple system there. Sort of like the way we are on campus. If you're in the Olympic Village, you just dial the last four numbers.
Do you think they have an Olympic radio station there?
You know, they just might. They just might. Let's find out. That worked. Fine, didn't it?
Yeah.
Again, let me say, if our business manager is panicking, we did try doing this on our personal accounts here. It didn't work, but we will, when the bill comes in, if the bill comes in, that is, we will certainly make full restitution and all that kind of jazz. 401-2055, and this will be the American team of the Olympics. Now, what should we say to them, Jim? I don't even know how they're doing. I haven't been paying any attention.
I really haven't been paying much attention either, but we've apparently been doing very well.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, they can tell us. They can tell us how they're doing. And we'll tell them they're talking to people on Long Island and Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way this repulses.
Yes.
And then it must be an American-made phone system.
Probably it would be.
It sounds just like an American ring. Never heard that in another country. Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hello, do you speak English?
Yes, I do.
Hi, I'm calling from the United States. Is this the American Olympic team?
Uh-huh. Yes, it is.
Okay, we're calling from a radio station on Long Island, and we just wanted to talk to you on the air and see how the team was doing and how everything is going.
You need to talk to a press person. Let me give you his number.
Well, is it?
I cannot transfer this telephone call, but I could give you their number.
Uh-huh. Okay, might as well.
Okay, let's see. His name is Mike.
Yeah.
Moran, Moran.
Okay.
His telephone number is 577-8834.
Is he not in the village?
This is Athletic Village, and he's in the Press Village.
Oh, he's in Press Village, and you're in Athletic Village. So Press Village is 577?
No, Press Village is 577-8834, and he's over there.
Okay, he's not in 401 then.
I'm sorry?
He's not in the 401 exchange, is he?
No.
Okay.
577-8834.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
Okay. You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, boy. Well, 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 we're getting closer.
Yeah.
We have a phone number of somebody in Korea that we will ask how the American team is doing. You want to take some calls first? They seem to be waiting very patiently.
I guess so. I guess okay, that so would make sense.
Good evening. Yeah. You're on Brain Damage. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi, Eric.
Yo.
Yeah, you know who this is, right?
No, I don't.
Adam.
Adam. Adam. Adam. Adam. Yes, Adam. How are you? You're one of our semi-regular callers.
Semi-regular, yeah.
Okay. What's up with you?
No, I was listening to the thing before about, before you started calling these people in Korea.
Uh-huh. South Korea, yes.
South Korea, oh, yeah, that's right. There are two of them.
There's two of them.
Yeah,
can you imagine if there were two United States? That would be incredible, but...
There used to be, but...
Yeah, that's true. That's true. There did used to be. Go ahead.
All right, first of all, what you said before about kids in power and about how they don't have any.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think you know from a magazine that I won't mention on the air that some of them do happen to have some.
Well, I think you're talking about a magazine dealing with computer hackers and things like that. Yes, kids can have a lot of power if they know how to use technology. That certainly is true.
Yeah, and as somebody said in Tap Magazine once, having technology on your side is better than having God on your side.
Which
is sometimes true, unless, like, this is the Inquisition or something again.
Uh-huh.
All the fundamentalists take over.
Well, now, do you think kids today have technology on their side? Do you think they know how to use it?
Only the lucky few.
And what makes them get that ability?
Let's see.
Are they born into it? Do they learn? Is it easy to learn?
No, but,
I assume you know something about technology. Is that correct?
Not as much as you, of course.
I did not come here to be talked up to like that.
Oh, yeah, I'm not. All right, also about, you know, you're talking about the debate also, right?
Yeah.
And about, you know, remember when Michael Dukakis was talking about that kid who couldn't play baseball?
Yeah, the kid who couldn't play baseball because his father was worried that he would get hurt, and if he got hurt, he didn't have the insurance money to cover his injuries. Yes, that was quite a story.
Yeah, but it wasn't true.
Well, it was football and soccer instead of baseball. Okay, but...
No, it's not even close to that. It was in a newspaper. I think it was in Texas, right?
Uh-huh.
And they never bothered to check up on the story to make sure it was true. And it turned out to be an error because according to... I think it's in every state's law. I'm not sure if it's a federal law or not. But every, like, little league organizations and things like that have to have insurance to cover in case somebody gets hurt while playing.
Well, I saw a picture, I think it was either in Newsday or the Times, that showed that kid and his father and pretty much just said, you know, it was football and soccer, not baseball, but they didn't say anything about that. Maybe the same rules don't apply for football or something?
No, it's the same thing because you have to have have insurance, just like parks have to have insurance and schools.
Huh.
So it's sports teams, any sports organization, or anything where somebody could get hurt, has to have insurance.
Interesting point. Well, I mean, do you think he intentionally lied, or do you think he just misunderstood?
They just never bothered to check up on the story.
Uh-huh.
And he said that, and everyone says, ooh, right. And
who do you think won the debate?
To tell you the truth, I think that, they both made a couple of mistakes, but neither of them made any mistakes that were, terrible, except when Michael Dukakis did that, and when he told George Bush he didn't know what he was talking about when he said 1,000 points was right. Meanwhile, it was, like, pretty obvious to me what he was saying.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I think George Bush seemed very tense, but Michael Dukakis, he didn't seem tense. He just didn't seem... that open, you know. He was just sort of standing there. He didn't move once, I don't think, throughout the whole night. In fact, if you saw there, it sort of like carried him away afterwards. He didn't seem capable of moving by himself. George Bush, he was uptight, but at least he was flailing his arms about a bit, you know, and doing human-type things. I don't know. It is...
Little strings hanging off Dukakis' arms when in his head, moving him back and forth like a little marionette thing.
That kind of thing does mean something to the voters. It may not mean much to being President of the United States, but it does sort of affect you.
Pretty much how Ronald Reagan got office, so...
Reagan got... I don't know how he did. He's just a master communicator. That's how he did it. That's how... I think he did it anyway.
Well, so this is funny about, it's about Lloyd Benson, and it's true also, which makes it even funnier.
Uh-huh.
In 1987, I forget the exact date, but it was in 1987, he made a press release that, this was before he was chosen as vice president.
Uh-huh.
Nominee. And he said that any lobbyist could pay him $10,000 and get to eat lunch with him, I mean breakfast with him once a month for a year.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and the only thing is I've heard stories that his table manners aren't exactly that great.
Well, now I think maybe we're going beyond our boundaries here.
It's sort of funny how he thinks that somebody would actually want to go and eat breakfast with him like he was important or something.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe his wife does. Then again, you know, no one's really talked to her. I think the wives should have a debate. I mean, that would be something. Can you imagine Nancy Reagan debating with Rosalind Carter? That would have been something.
Yeah.
That would have been a great debate.
I think I have Barbara Bush's phone number right here also.
You have Barbara Bush's phone number?
Yes, I tried to call before. It's this magazine that just came out today called the Freakers Hackers Underground Network newsletter.
There's a magazine called that?
It's another newsletter.
Oh, boy. Well, this is the first edition of that, I assume.
Newsletter number one.
Where does it emanate from?
From the Hackers Den BBS in 718.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good to hear. You be sure to call me afterwards or some other time and send me a copy of that somehow, because I would like to see that.
I'll send you a disc with it on it.
I don't accept discs because, you know, people send me viruses sometimes on discs, and I don't like that. That's not friendly, you know.
Oh, it's a simple text file. It's just one big text
file. Yeah, that's what they all say. And you plug the thing in, and all the lights start going on in your computer. The thing blows up, and I don't know.
Eric, you have pretty much.
I'm paranoid. I know I'm paranoid.
And you know it's all correct and verifiable. Just otherwise, I wouldn't get that magnificent magazine of yours every month.
Okay, well, now, are you going to watch the debate on Thursday? Wednesday, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Vice presidential debate. Make sure you do.
Yeah. Also, hold on. Now about what you were saying before about bank fraud.
Yeah, bank fraud.
Right? Let's see. It's pretty interesting. I heard in Australia, there's this kid. You know the little pieces of cardboard that come in the back of chocolate bars?
Pieces, don't tell me. He stuck one into a card slot in the bank machine, and it did something.
This was like a, I forget how old he was. I think he was like a 12-year-old kid in Australia. He took one. It was the same size as a bank card.
Uh-huh.
He took a knife and rounded the edges.
Uh-huh.
And he covered it with glue and stuck it in and withdrew $10,000.
Now, I think, A, he deserves to keep the money. B, the bank deserves to go out of business. And C, the chocolate bar company gets a percentage. I think that's only fair. That's incredible.
And also after that company started to make the chocolate bars in different size boxes.
Well, thanks for enlightening us, Adam.
Also, hold on.
Oh, boy.
There's more. Also,
there's more callers. We have a ton of callers here. We got to get to them. We got to call back to Korea. Go ahead. One more thing.
We're half an hour there, so.
Go ahead.
All right. Also, I'm not going to say to do this because it's wrong. Anything that could hurt another thing, especially a computer, is wrong.
Of course, we have to protect computers more than anything else. But go ahead.
People, yeah. What some people like to do is feed slices of cheese, that you've probably heard of this, but some people didn't, into where the cards go.
Slices of cheese. Well, okay, that's where I draw the line. I will not go around to automatic teller machines carrying slices of cheese.
It seems that American cheese seems to be the favorite.
Listen to this, America. This is what's going on.
No, but the worst part is that people do this at night time, then when the repair people come to take out the cheese, they have to open up the thing, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, the money's inside, then the guy is sitting there waiting in the corner.
Uh-huh.
Like a sawed-off shotgun or a
machine. Oh, I've heard enough now. Now we're talking about armed robbery here.
Yeah, and then they take all the money out from inside it.
This radio station, nor any of its affiliates, advocate armed robbery, unless when necessary.
We have affiliates?
And in foreign countries and things like that.
You mean we're like a network?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
we
that.
We have all these commercial stations that follow us around everywhere we go.
No kidding. You mean,
didn't know about that?
We're feeding all these other stations
now. For instance,
now.
We play a record now, and they play it 6 months from now.
I see. That kind of affiliate.
And we give them the credit for discovering it.
Oh.
Anyway, Adam, thank you very much. We've got to go to some more calls.
There's one more thing about what you mentioned about the banks, what they're doing to make a check if the security, right?
This is the last thing. Go ahead.
They copied that from the Army. I read in this book in the library once.
Shouldn't read those books, you know.
Yeah. No, that what the Army does, they have these teams called Wolf Packs, and what they do is they pay them to try and hack into all their computers to see if anybody else can get in. And it's because they figure, well, these guys are government people, so they know what they're doing.
Uh-huh. And do they?
No. but they're under that illusion, so it's fine with them.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, thanks very much. And, you know, there was one thing that I remembered about ATMs. Yes, one thing I remembered, and I totally forgot what it was. But I did remember it when Adam was talking about them. Yes, I did.
Oh, are you going to say anything about
them? Well, if I remember, I certainly will.
Oh, you don't remember?
I remembered a second ago, and then I drew a blank. It's like somebody went into my head and erased that part of my memory.
Oh, wow.
I shouldn't... I remember what it was. Everyone thinks you need... that same bank card to get into the little room. But any card with a magnetic strip will open that door. That's the most amazing thing.
Oh,
and I think that's for people that are robbing other people, of course, that's very important
information.
It's
very bad, yeah.
But
I mean, that's not a good...
They could easily install machines that would only take that bank's card or an affiliated bank's card and open the door. But you could stick a mobile card or any kind of a card, a gas station card or a Macy's card into those little doors, and it'll buzz and open the door for you. Doesn't have to be the same card that you use in the machine.
Gee.
It won't give you money for a Macy's card. That'll be the day when it does.
Can you get maybe a scarf or something out of the machine with a Macy's card?
Now, that's next. That's next. I think they do that in Star Trek, don't they? Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yes, I'd like to talk about the new four preview shows.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, they have a new one out called Freddy's Nightmares.
Yeah, I heard about it. That's a syndicated one, isn't it?
Yeah, they're but they're not supposed to have... Freddy Krueger's not supposed to appear, only like maybe one or two of them. What's the sense of that?
I guess it's, stretching it as thinly as they can without spending too much money.
Maybe they're going to call it Freddy's Sort of Nightmares.
Yeah, you know, Freddy's Nightmares and, you know, nightmares of people that have heard about Freddy.
That's almost like the Friday 13th series without Jason.
Mm.
That's right.
Right.
What's going on here? Why are so many of these kind of shows popping up all of a sudden? And there's new Twilight Zone episodes I keep seeing?
Yeah, I think that's nice development. Always interesting.
No, it's good, though. They're getting the Wonder Years back on. That was a good show.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew when you said what's good is, and that is the one good show I can think of. What I'm surprised about, though, is they've only ordered 12 episodes. That's half a season. Why is such a good show? Why didn't they have a full season of it?
I guess they wanted to see what it looks like in the first few weeks with the ratings.
But they already did that. They had six of them last year.
Oh.
And
I know it is. It is. It really seems that there's too keyed into the ratings to a really hyper extent where they don't. As you point out, they've already tested the show. If it worked so well, why did they have to keep testing it?
Any other comments on shows, sir?
No, that's just about it. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
You know they're bringing back Mission Impossible with Peter Graves.
I saw that
description of it here.
It looks exactly the same. You want to quickly do that?
Yeah. It says it says in the description. It says, "Good afternoon, Mr. Phelps. The people you are looking at are the newest members of your Impossible Missions force." Now there's a picture here of Peter Graves and four people who did not appear in the original series, but I noticed that one of them looks pretty much like Greg Morris looks, and another one looks pretty much like, and I can't think of his name, the very muscular person. I forgot the name of the actor, the original actor. But anyway, clockwise from left. I mean, this isn't much meaning. I mean, for those of you who are sitting in a room, you could do that. Or for those of you who are sitting in a room with five people standing in front of you, you can have them pretend that they are the people that we're talking about.
Clockwise from left.
Clockwise from left. They are.
How could it be clockwise from right? You know? Could you possibly... I guess you could do that.
You could. You take the rightmost...
Go ahead.
But the names of the people are Nicholas Black, is the name of the character, played by Theo Pinglis, Max Hart, played by Tony Hamilton, Grant Collier, played by Phil Morris.
Oh, that's a superstar. That was a shooting star there.
Well, I better call Joel Block right away.
Oh, I think that person's going to be big. That person's going to... What is their name again?
Grant Collier, played by Phil Morris.
Phil Morris.
Yeah. Wow.
That name certainly means something. I don't know. Maybe our star machine thinks it's Philip Morris.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's a
Philip
little
Morris?
Sensitive there. Maybe.
Oh, Philip Morris. No, it's not responding.
You know, maybe it's because it sounds like Greg Morris. I don't know if this is the person. Well, let me see.
Philip
clockwise
Morris.
From left. One, two. Clockwise from left. They are Nicholas. This doesn't make any sense. Either that or I don't know how to tell time. Well, anyway, Casey Randall, played by Terry Markwell, and, of course, yourself, played by Peter Graves. Your mission, Jim, should you decide to accept it, is to make brand-new episodes of the series that made you famous. You and your elite team will go to Australia and act out these stories, which, if the past is any guide, will call for you to foil the plans of a dictator of a small Latin American country or protect a diplomat on whose well-being the fate of the world depends.
Mm.
You will employ ticking time bombs, sputtering fuses, ingenious gadgets, and the trademark suspense music of Lalo Schifrin. He's a great composer.
Oops.
You will refrain from asking whatever happened to Barbara Bain and Martin Landau. I think they're a couple of good actors. As always, should you or any of your IM force be caught or killed or tortured by the critics, the secretary will disavow any knowledge of your actions. This tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds. If I were you, I'd drop the tape recorder right about now. Good luck, Jim, ABC.
That's on ABC what night?
On Sunday nights, and now I'm wondering whether Peter Graves might have done better to remake My Friend Flicka.
Ah, well, maybe next season if this doesn't work
maybe.
Out.
Maybe.
Maybe they'll come up with imaginative ways to destroy the tape. In fact, I don't think they have to use tape anymore.
No,
I don't use
true.
Tape anymore.
That's true.
I mean, I don't do Mission Impossible type things, but I don't think I would use tape. Let's take some more calls. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi, Eric.
Hi.
It's Bill.
Bill, how you doing?
I'm upset. I am panicking, yes.
Ah, Bill Fox, our business manager, who just witnessed us making a call to Korea on the station phone. Yes, well, Bill, first of all...
It wasn't mine. It could have been like Paraguay, but it's like the other side of the world.
It is the other side of the world, but don't you feel a certain kind of curiosity as to just what that will look like on the phone, Bill? And will they say what do they call South Korea anyway? It's got a long name, like the Federal Republic of, I don't know, something like that.
I don't know. It's not as much curiosity as outright fear at this point.
Uh-huh. Well, I am curious to see what it looks like. We still have one more call coming up because we have to talk to Mike Moran? Moran? I never know how to pronounce that name. I always insult
people. Oh, the press agent in Korea?
Yeah, Moran. No, we're not going to call your relatives. People are lining up now.
Hmm?
People are lining up wanting to call overseas now.
Oh, really?
Only to the Olympic Village. That's the only people we're going to talk to because they deserve to hear the congratulations of USB, even though we have no idea how they're doing.
The U.S. basketball team lost. They were upset.
The U.S. basketball team lost? Okay, we have to call them and consult. Did they lose today?
Hello, Jim. How are you?
Hi, how are you doing, Bill? How's it going?
Wiped out by the Soviet Union.
Oh, boy.
It's a long shot.
Which team was it?
Hey, why don't we call the Soviet team? That would be interesting, too, wouldn't it? Well, we could do all these things. Of course, we don't have much time to do it.
Yeah, we don't have much money to do it either.
No, we don't. But I'll cover this. Don't worry. Don't worry. This is my foolish expenditure here. It couldn't be that much. It's the weekend anyway.
Mm.
But we'll see, won't we? At least it's not person to person.
Yeah, really.
Because we don't know any people. Anyway, we're going to take a couple more calls, and we're going to make that one final call, and hopefully everything will work out nicely.
Okay, Eric. I'll see you soon.
Okay.
See you.
Cut
him off. That's 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello, Eric.
Yeah?
About that bank, that caller talked about the bank for it.
Yeah?
Not advocating this, but I heard about this.
Okay.
A man walked into a bank.
Uh-huh.
And you know those stacks of, like, withdrawal slips? Slips that they have?
The slips or the envelopes?
The slips.
Okay.
He took a whole stack of those.
Uh-huh.
And he cut out all these letters from newspapers.
Uh-huh.
Pasted them on the back and said, "This is a stick-up. I have a gun." And
he said
went to, you know, several, you know, it was a chain bank. And he went to several of them around the city.
Uh-huh.
And he slipped them in, you know, every, like, 10.
Oh, my goodness. So that unsuspecting people would go up to the teller, hand them a withdrawal slip.
Stamp it.
And all of a sudden, they oh boy,
that's terrible.
Yeah, and then come to think,
what happened though? Did that amount to anything?
They didn't catch the man.
But what happened to the people that accidentally presented those slips?
Oh, they had to go down to the station.
I hope nobody was hurt.
Well,
wow,
another thing.
That's horrible. But go ahead, yeah.
A member of your staff is up to no good.
Well, that's nothing unusual.
That's Eric Crowley is running a still.
What's that?
Running a still.
Running a still?
Student Union basement.
Oh, my goodness. Well, well, we'll certainly have to look into that, won't we?
Yeah, I mean, he keeps his merchandise in several lockers.
Ah.
Basement. And I've called the police.
Okay, well, make sure you do that, and we'll send a squad of USB patrolmen down there ourselves.
Okay.
We do have our own security force. I don't know if everyone's aware of that. Okay, thanks for calling. 632-6901.
Why, hi.
Well, you have to wait for me to say good evening. You're on Brain Damage. Go ahead now.
Okay, hi, it's Seth.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
What's up?
I took some notes. Wow, been listening for a while. Okay, first of all, talking about the new fall season, I came up with an idea from you guys calling overseas and blah, 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 blah. How does this sound? A quadriplegic who has access to a telephone. He's a quadriplegic invert, and he starts making overseas calls for comfort and company.
Uh-huh.
What do you think of that?
You're talking about a TV show?
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool?
Wouldn't that make a better radio show? I mean, what are you going to focus on this paraplegic talking for an hour? You have to have something else going on there, or you know, people won't really watch it. But it does sound like a great idea for a radio program.
And
in fact, we could just start it right now, except we're not paraplegic.
Actually, well, you don't have to. Well, figure, if you're on radio, you don't have to be paraplegic. You can just fake it.
You could say you're paraplegic. Yeah, I guess so.
Say you're paraplegic.
I don't want to.
No, well, okay. I'll say I'm paraplegic even though I'm not, but if I didn't tell you that I wasn't paraplegic, everyone would believe me, right? Huh? Hmm?
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, and I didn't see the...
Actually, I don't think the part about being paraplegic has anything to do with it. I don't think that's relevant. But, you know, I'll tell you something. A lot of blind people make lots of phone calls. I think that might be your angle. A lot of blind people make incredible amounts of phone calls.
Well, the reason why I chose paraplegic is because there's this album by this guy called Roger Waters. And it's focused on this paraplegic who sort of, like, has access to the telephone. And
Radio Chaos or whatever that is.
And calls up a radio station and talks to the DJ and stuff like that and hooks into... U.S. nuclear defense and simulates a nuclear war, but doesn't actually do it.
Oh, that's nice, yeah.
Anyway, and then I didn't watch the debate, but the next day, like in school, one kid just came into class and started just mumbling over and over and over again, 1,000 points of light, 1,000 points of light. He was just taken so aback by that.
When people hear Pink Floyd or anything to do with Pink Floyd, they act that way. I don't know what it is.
No, 1,000 points of light?
Wait, talk about Roger Waters?
No, I'm talking about the debate.
Oh, I didn't know you were talking about the debate. I'm sorry. I missed your transition there.
I switched. Sorry.
1,000 points. that's pretty amazing. And they wouldn't stop saying that, huh?
No, they wouldn't stop saying it. Went through the whole day. We had to bring him down to the nurse, and like they had to give him a sedative and stuff like that, and they hit him over the head several times, and finally he stopped saying it.
But now, who do you think won the debate?
Who do I think won the debate? I told you, I didn't watch it.
So, it doesn't mean you don't have an opinion?
Well, from what I heard... Bush made a few mistakes, I forget which one it was, but, oh yeah, he had said, one thing that I heard he had said is he said, when I was inducted in his, or when I was sworn in as president, he said at one point.
Bush said that? I missed that one.
Yeah, that's what I heard he said from the teacher and stuff like that.
Wow.
So.
Well, you know, as I said before, I think Bush is kind of, trying to... address our sort of fondness for Reagan and his bumbling mistakes, saying that if you're like me, you won't be losing those bumbling mistakes. You'll still have occasional lapses of memory. You'll still have those amazing phrases that no one could ever think of, and like you know any comedy gag writer would completely miss these.
Figure this, okay? Drugs are bad, right?
Yeah.
So is Ronald Reagan. Therefore,
Ronald Reagan is a drug.
Right, and may decrease sperm production.
Well, you have to take that up with the folks at Brookhaven National Labs or whatever.
When you're calling the village...
I certainly don't want to study that any further.
When you're calling the village, I got in my mind a picture of Greenwich Village instead of the Olympic Village.
Really? I was thinking of the prisoner village.
Hmm. And
Patrick McGowan.
And I just want to say to that person who called before and slandered Eric Crowley, Eric Crowley is a good person.
Say the name right. It's Corley, not Crowley.
Well, Corley.
You got to get it right if you're going to slander me.
Sorry.
Because otherwise I can't sue because my name's spelled incorrectly, you know? And if I'm going to sue, I might as well, you know, it has to be worth my while.
Sorry, I was thinking of Chris Crowley. Anyway.
Yeah, Chris Crowley. Okay, now, is he immune from slander? Jim, do you know if that was lifted? I heard Chris Crowley was immune from slander. I'm not sure. Well, anyway, I'm not immune from slander, and I do pursue these cases vigorously and usually triumphantly.
That caller who slandered Eric Crowley is horrible. He's the same person who called up in the weeks before.
Well, let me just hasten to caution you here. We do not want wars between our callers.
Well, now, he's that same person who called up about that Connecticut guy.
About what Connecticut guy?
The Connecticut guy said, oh, well, there's this... There's this guy in Connecticut, the Connecticut radio station, and you said bad things about him. And
that's all gone and past and finished history and all that kind of thing.
Same person. He's trying to start another fight.
Well, why don't you meet him someplace and deal with him yourself? But we don't want to use the airwaves for wars between our listeners or between our DJs or anything like that.
I'm a pacifist, but I
withdraw. We used to have DJ wars all the time. We'd have one DJ in one studio, another in this studio here.
Like,
and they'd say horrible things back and forth to each other. They'd play records over each other's voices.
So it's like dueling DJs.
It was horrible. It was horrible. We had to stop. We had to bring in security to break it up once.
Like one DJ would go, dun 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 dun, and the other one would go, dun 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 dun.
No, the other one would play Beethoven's Ninth.
Ah.
So you could see it's the communication skills did not develop from that.
Hmm.
Anyway, thank you for calling. We have an appointment in Seoul, and we have to get over there.
Au revoir.
Bye-bye. Jim, are you still with us? Jim has fallen asleep again. Oh, that's too bad. Well, okay, we are going to call the Olympic Village. We're going to try to speak to our press spokesman over there, spokesperson, and see just how the American team is doing. I misdialed. I'm going to redial. Oh, boy, those are really nice beeps, aren't they? Let's have a few more beeps here. And that's the final beep. And, Jim, if you're anywhere in the sound of my voice, please come back, because we do want you to hear this, and we do want to hear your witty comments throughout this, although I should say that the people on the other end of the phone cannot hear Jim. They can only hear me. That was decided previously through a drawing supervised by the New York State Lottery. Uh-oh, got a frog in my throat.
USOC Press Office, may I help you?
Yes, I'm calling from the United States. We're calling from WUSB Radio in Stony Brook, New York, and we'd like to find out how the U.S. Olympic team is doing overall. Kind of a broad
medal
question.
Count? Medal count-wise?
Yeah, I guess medal count-wise, and also, how they're doing individually, that kind of thing. We've got a bunch of listeners who are just interested.
Well, I can get you the medal count. I have to put it up on the computer.
Okay.
We're third. Russia's first.
And who's second?
Republic of Germany is second, and we're third.
Which East or West Germany second?
East.
East Germany is second. I see.
Right. We're third.
Uh huh. And when is the last day of the Olympics?
Today.
Today. So, have the closing ceremonies begun yet?
Today. Today meaning October 2nd.
Uh huh. I see. Are you from the United States?
Yes, I am.
And how do you think the whole thing has gone? Do you think it's been...
I think it's gone well.
Uh-huh. And I'm curious, what's the weather like there now?
Oh, geez, it's... every day the weather's been sunny and about... Oh, gosh, 75, no humidity.
Really? That's incredible. Is it daytime there now?
Right now, it's about... 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Really? 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday, right?
On the 2nd, right.
Okay, because it's almost midnight here, and we're about to go into Sunday.
It's 14 hours difference from New York.
Uh-huh. Had you ever been to Korea before this?
Have not. I'm from Michigan.
Uh-huh. A lot of us have been watching the Olympics on TV. We've, seen the coverage. I don't know if you get to see the same coverage over there that we do here. Is there anything that perhaps the coverage missed that you could add for us?
No, I don't believe so. They've probably covered most of the events and extensively.
Uh-huh. Are you pretty much free to move about throughout the whole city? Have you traveled around a bit?
Oh, yeah, that's no problem.
Uh-huh.
No problem.
Great.
So,
Do you think you'll come back to Korea again sometime?
Come in the main press center, and when you go to the venues, okay. But, you know, you show your badge, and they frisk you, and off you go.
Is there an awful lot of security there?
Oh, geez, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Especially getting into the hotels and the venues, there's security all over the place.
Uh-huh.
Police and guards of all sorts.
Are the people from the different countries, are they mingling, or are they pretty much staying with their own?
Oh, I would say they're mingling.
Uh-huh.
I would say they're mingling. I don't see that as a problem.
Uh-huh. I know in past Olympics, the Eastern Blocs have pretty much stayed to themselves. The Soviets have...
Well, I guess, you know, I have to qualify that. I'm normally in the main press center, and I don't get out to the venues much, so I guess I was a little premature in answering that, because I guess I don't, you know, in the press center, everybody seems jovial and, you know, seems to mingle okay.
Yeah. Technology-wise, is everything state-of-the-art over there?
Oh, yeah, we have the latest computer equipment, and everything seems to be state-of-the-art.
Uh-huh. I noticed your phone system seems to be very state-of-the-art. It sounds like an American phone system, in fact.
Yeah, you know, you're coming through loud and clear, and there's no static, and...
Uh-huh. We're over here in New York, and...
And phones here, and...
It's incredible. We're talking to you in Seoul, South Korea. We're in New York, and it sounds like you're just down the block.
Right. It's great.
One more question. Can you describe where are you now? Are you in some kind of a room where there's athletes coming in and out?
Right now, I'm in the main press center. I'm in the USOC office, okay? And this office is just, we've got a computer, a printer, just a couple copy machines and a few desks and chairs and typewriters and to type the stories and things like that. As far as the complex itself, it's a three-story building, like a big, downstairs is like a big main ballroom, if you will.
Uh-huh.
With various offices that are built with, looks like portable walls.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But the main press center, there's just rows and rows and rows and rows of desks and typewriters and TV screens, and it's like one big ballroom filled with typewriters and desks and TV screens for all the reporters.
And there must be thousands of reporters there.
Oh, sure.
Tell me...
Over.
Are there a lot of American things, McDonald's, Burger King, are they all there?
Well, I tell you, I got here, my press officers from the USOC arrived here like September 10th, okay? And within that time, within a city block, okay? Wendy's opened up, and Baskin-Robbins ice cream, and that was a real treat. And
uh-huh.
The hamburgers are great.
Uh-huh.
Just like home.
Well, that's...
They have a little snack counter, you know, where you can get grilled cheese, ham and cheese, hamburgers, hot dogs, ice cream, and things like that.
Uh-huh. Do you know if that Wendy's is going to stay after the Olympics is over?
Well, I imagine.
Uh-huh.
I would imagine. I mean, it's a temporary structure, you know. I would assume the opening just, you know, coincided with the opening of the games.
I see. How have the people of Seoul received everyone?
Gracious people. They're very nice, very friendly, very gracious, very polite.
Uh huh. Have you done much traveling in other parts of the world?
I haven't. Oh, me?
Yeah.
I've been to Europe and the Caribbean.
Uh-huh.
Me personally.
I see. Do you see a similarity between going to foreign countries? Do the people pretty much seem to welcome Americans wherever you go?
Well, personally, I was in Romania, and this was a few years ago, and we were the first Americans there in 50 years, and we were different because we hadn't been there in 50 years, so it was, that was a little different. But here, we're just, I think we're very much accepted.
What made you decide to go to Romania? That's quite a strange place to go.
Well, I don't know. I was with a travel club, and they had a trip to Romania, so we took it. I mean, that's the only reason I went to Romania.
You go to Bucharest?
Pardon me?
You go to Bucharest? That's the capital of Romania.
Yeah. No, I was in Constantine, and I was down by the beach area.
I see. Well, that's pretty much all the questions I think I have. Anything you'd like to add about the whole event? The most exciting moment, perhaps, or
We won 35 gold medals. The Federal Republic of Germany's won 37, and Russia, the last count, was 55.
Did you say Federal Republic or Democratic Republic?
East Germany.
East Germany, okay.
Right. You know, there's... Naturally, there's a couple more medals we possibly could have won, and there's a couple we got that we didn't expect, so I guess maybe it balances out. The boxer, that was tough on the boxer today, the boxer Jones... it looks like he had it all away and they gave it to the Korean.
Really?
I don't know if you've seen that yet.
No, actually I haven't watched as much as I should have, I guess. I'm kind of
old.
Yeah. But I know a lot of people have been following everything, and it's been quite an event, I'm sure.
Oh, surely. It's great being here. We leave tomorrow.
Going back to Michigan.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks very much for talking with us. And what was your name again?
My name's Jim Constant.
Okay, well, thanks very much for talking to us and our listeners here in Long Island.
Oh, appreciate you calling.
Okay, and have fun. Thanks. Have fun your remaining day there.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ah, yes. The sound of the Olympic Village in Seoul, South Korea. And Jimmy, with us?
Yes. I had to run out there for a second.
Ah, well, it's...
I had to make a call, actually.
It was quite a connection. I mean,
that's terrific.
You hear the excitement in the background, and, wow. Of course, it's going to cost me a pretty penny, but I think it was worth it just to hear that.
Yeah, it was something that I think people wouldn't think to do normally.
And in 1992, we're going to call... Where are they going to be held?
I think it's Spain, I think.
Spain. Well, I think the rates will probably be cheaper to Spain.
Mm.
But, oh, who knows? Maybe we'll just go to Spain and
maybe
and call back here.
Maybe.
Wow. Well, I'm glad we did that because we won't be able to do it next week. They won't be there anymore.
No,
going
that's
back
true.
Tomorrow.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what would happen if you tried that number next week, who you'd get.
That's a very good idea. That's an extremely good idea. I am going to do that. Next week at this time, we will try calling those same phone numbers and see what happens because the Olympic Village will no longer be there.
Hmm.
And who knows? We might get one of those, you know, doo-doo-doos in Korean.
That's right.
That'd be interesting. I'd like to see one of those. Well, that was a event to be remembered.
Yes.
And we'll be back again next week.
Oh, yes.
Talking about all kinds of other things. Maybe the new fall TV season. Maybe more bank fraud. Maybe a couple more international calls. Certainly calls from our listeners here at the radio station. Stay tuned for Lobotomy coming up with the brothers. And as I said, we'll be back again next week from 10 to 12 with Brain Damage. Jim, thanks for coming by.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see you again, I guess, in what, 3 weeks?
Yeah, thank you. Love to.
Okay. Be seeing you.
The lunatic is on the grass. The lunatic is on the grass, remembering games, daisy chains and laughs. Got to keep the lunatic on the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my home.
The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. Every day the paper boy brings more.
Just hold on a second.
You raise the blade. You make the change. You rearrange the world. And you lock the door. Throw away the key. Someone's in my head. But it's not me.
This is Pete with the concert billboard for Sunday, October 2nd. You can catch Prince tonight and tomorrow at Madison Square Garden, Tom Chapman at the Bottom Line, Wynton Marsalis at the Village Vanguard, and Graham Parker at the Ritz in Manhattan. That'll happening tonight. On tomorrow, Monday, Christian Death will be at Cat Club, Dizzy Gillespie at the Victoria House, and Tommy Conwell will be at the Bottom Line Monday and Tuesday. On Tuesday, Alec and Circus will be coming to Stonebrook, and if you can come down here, that'd be a really great show. On Wednesday, AC/DC and White Line will be at Nassau Coliseum, Hot House Flowers will be at the Bottom Line, and Jackson Browne will be at the Beacon Theater Wednesday and Thursday. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, you can catch John Hyatt at the Bottom Line, and on Friday, A Flock of Seagulls will be at Bay Street, Aswad at the Ritz, Freddie McGregor and Maxie Priest will be at the Beacon Theater, Midnight Oil will be at Felt Forum, Ray Alexander will be at Dining Car 1890, the 7th and the 8th, and Room Full of Blues will be at the Lone Star Cafe, also on the 7th and the 8th, and Warzone, Sick of It All, and Raw Deal will be at Sundance and Bayshore, all those shows happening on Friday. On Saturday, David Lindley will be at the Ritz Holy Near at Town Hall, and the Impact Tour, featuring the world's top skateboarders, bicyclists, and roller skaters, will be at the Meadowlands and going to Nassau Coliseum on Sunday. Also on Saturday, Max Roach will be at the Intermedia Arts Center in Huntington. Ray Alexander will be at Dining Car 1890, Room Full of Blues at the Lone Star Cafe. Spyro Gyra and Kenny Rankin will be at the Beacon Theater, all those shows on the 8th. On the 9th, Buckwheat Zydeco will be at the World Kronos Quartet at Intermedia Arts Center. And happening at the Bottom Line, you can catch Robin Ford and Tom Paxton, those shows on the 9th. On the 10th, Jack Bruce will be at the Bottom Line the 10th and the 11th, and Alec and Circus will be moving to Heaven. On the 11th, Van Halen and Private Life will be at Madison Square Garden. On Wednesday the 12th, Commander Cody and his Lost Planet Airmen will be at Stephen Talkhouse. Little Feet will be at Beacon Theater the 12th and 13th. Marty Jones and Don Dixon at the Bottom Line. And Van Halen and Private Life will be moving to the Nassau Coliseum on the 12th. And on the 13th, Little Feet will be at the Beacon Theater. Mark Isham at Bottom Line. The Ramones will be playing in California. And UB40 and Billy Bragg will be doing a show at Madison Square Garden. Just reminding you of some great shows coming to Stony Brook, brought to you by the Student Activities Board. On October 4th, Alkin Circus will be at Stony Brook. Camper Band Beethoven will be at the Ballroom this on the 19th. On the 21st, Susie and the Banshees will be coming to the gym. And on the 22nd, Jorma Kaukonen and Rink Danko will be at the gym. And on the 28th, don't miss the New York Citizens playing a Halloween concert at the Ballroom. This has been the Concert Billboard for WUSB in Stony Brook. The billboard can be heard weekdays at 3 and 9 a.m., 4:30 and 10 p.m., and on weekends at noon and midnight. If you missed anything, you can call us here at the station at 516-632-6901.